We are going to ponder this hour why 2015 was the second consecutive record-breaking year for charitable giving. According to the Giving USA Foundation and the Lilly Family School of Philanthropy at Indiana University, charitable giving rose 4% in 2015 to more than $373 billion. Why have charitable donations hit never-before-seen levels? Where are the donations going? What motivates the givers? We'll discuss all of these questions and welcome your thoughts and your favorite causes this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, July 6th. So what causes do you donate to and why? Or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Josh Burkholz, chair of the Advisory Council on Methodology at Giving USA. He's also principal at Bentz Whaley Fleschner, which provides fundraising advice and counsel to organizations around the world. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining us. So according to these latest figures, 2015 was America's most generous year to date in terms of charitable giving. What's behind that?
Oh, indeed it was. And I'd say overall, I think it embodies, the numbers embody more than just the numbers. I'd like to say it's a symbol of American spirit. It's a very American ideal to give and think of philanthropy as a solution set. People really do want to make a difference. They're supporting causes that matter to them. They're embracing philanthropy at higher levels than ever. And sometimes I like to think of it as we look at a lot of ways to solve problems in society, and certainly civic involvement is a wonderful way of doing that. And one way that sometimes is forgotten, but perhaps not now based on these record numbers, is how important philanthropy can be to really solve problems, a direct impact on things you care about.
Yeah, and we are sure giving a lot, $375 billion in 2015. Mm. Put that into context for us.
Well, it's an interesting large number. I know sometimes when you get into the billions, you know, it's just too many zeros to keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of the gross domestic product of the United States, that's about 2% of it. It's actually 2.1% of the gross domestic product. And that's been pretty stable. So even though the number is at a record level, we've really stayed at just around 2% of the gross domestic product. So it's really been level in relation to our production. And it's perhaps shifting a little bit. I'd say that some of the numbers historically, religion was by far the largest area, and it still is the largest area by share, but that's continually declining as we see great rise in other sectors, especially in education and healthcare, human services, and the arts. So we're seeing really growth in all sectors. Probably the biggest growth since the recession period has been in higher education, with some declines in international affairs, but actually recent turnarounds there, perhaps attributable to the Syrian refugee crisis.
Uh-huh.
But there's really areas across the board where we're seeing really growth in all areas, except giving directly to large foundations is the only one that saw a 3% decline this last year.
Interesting. This is the second straight year we've set a record for giving, a 4% jump. I read that's even stronger than the economic recovery.
It certainly is. I'd say as a rate, it's difficult to measure in some ways. The percentage compared to the economic recovery has been stable in terms of overall giving compared to GDP or individual giving compared to discretionary income. But because of some shifting patterns, partly driven by very large gifts, I think we had it's $3.3 billion last year in just gifts of over $100 million, which is a very large number. So big gifts are pulling that up. So there's some outliers. So it was also unique that there's big gifts of art and manuscripts and so forth to large universities, which pushed the needle a little bit, and probably some shifts in structured philanthropy, where it used to be only the very, very wealthy would have their own charitable foundations. The donor-advised fund phenomenon has become much more practical, and we're seeing even middle-class donors using structured philanthropy.
But is the increase in charitable giving a sign of economic recovery?
I'd like to say that it more often it follows and mirrors. What I've seen in a few cases, I look back at 2008, 2009, and in our company we do a lot of feasibility studies in advance of very large campaigns, and we were noticing in 08 that suddenly a lot of the very large donors were holding back. Mm-hmm. They weren't as ready to commit to very big pledges, and we were starting to wonder what's going on here, and perhaps the very upper echelon of wealth was onto something before the rest of us saw that coming. So I think we can see signs of economic changes, but often when we've looked at the larger the gift, the closer it mirrors perhaps our market trends. So very high-level gifts mirrors S&P 500, for example, but the lower-level gifts oftentimes will lag a little bit. So we'll see, what we've seen since the recovery is actually the very large donors have given more than ever as a percent of all giving, even though percent of their own wealth it might not be there. But where we've seen some declines is perhaps in the base giving and middle-class giving has actually gone down as they have not recovered as well as the upper 1%.
So with this figure, the $375 billion figure, can you kind of break that down for us a little bit as to is that coming from the big foundations, the big corporations, or what about individual donations?
Yeah, well, the giving from individuals is $264.5 billion. So a largest portion is from individuals. And we break out charitable bequests separately since technically they're states, but that $32 billion is technically individuals as well. So you could say about $300 billion are really individual-driven. Foundations give about $58 billion of that portion, so it's thought of that they're the largest donor class, but it's really people giving directly that are making the biggest difference in American philanthropy. Corporate giving is about $18 billion. So organizations, foundations, corporations make a much lesser portion, about $75 billion combined. The foundation portion, certainly there are individual and family foundations within that, which are tough to measure, and some people would argue that those are individual-based giving. But those large foundations is a smaller portion of the total, actually.
So where are these charitable dollars going in broad terms?
Oh, yes, most definitely. About $120 billion are going to religion. Education is getting just about $60 billion. Those are probably the larger two pieces. Then we're seeing human services, two foundations themselves, both in around the $40 billion range. Healthcare is about $30 billion. We're getting some smaller portions with public society benefit, arts, culture, and international affairs. International affairs is a really interesting one because giving overseas or giving to international causes has really declined every year up until this recent year since the recession. And I was trying to really determine why that is. There has been an increase in giving directly to overseas charities rather than U.S. charities doing work overseas. So some of the numbers are not in the U.S. philanthropy numbers necessarily from a recipient perspective. But what we're also seeing is international affairs historically has been more middle-class oriented as a charity, meaning a lot of sponsoring children, giving gift catalogs, giving through direct mail and online, and hadn't done a lot of work in cultivating the very large gifts. Higher education, in contrast, was very large gift oriented and not as successful, perhaps, in the middle class. And coming out of the recession, as the larger or the top 1% recovered so much better, we saw education with tremendous growth, where we actually saw declines in international affairs, only to be turned really recently with some of the global challenges around refugee crises. The last piece, about $10-11 billion, was given to the environment and animals. So really, we're seeing given around all areas up actually at record levels, except for giving to those large foundations you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, so why do you think that is, that foundations are receiving fewer gifts?
You know, I think that what it is the cost of foundations are a little bit different. There's some really great foundations that do wonderful things, and perhaps what they're competing with is the donor advised fund. I like to say that, you know, with investing, we had the wealth front or the robo-investing type of places, which make it really easy, or with our budget management, we have Mint. In philanthropy, we have the donor advised fund, so much so that the very large donor advised funds, like the Vanguard, Fidelity, and Schwab, their total assets have exceeded the total assets of all the community foundations at this point in their donor advised funds, for $27 billion versus $22 billion respectively, which is actually showing that people in droves and moving down are really enjoying being able to put their money into a donor advised fund with a very low fee. They're able to keep like a website with their favorite charities and just click on them and give those, and they're able to make those deductions at year end. That work is traditionally work that that foundations provided to very wealthy people, but structuring philanthropy is becoming much easier. It's still wealthy people by contrast for the whole country, but it's certainly a lower level of wealth than historically was in the foundation. So I think a big part of it is just that competition.
We are going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and after the news, we'll get into some of the reasons why we give, and I'd like to know what causes are important to you. What charities are you donating to and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We're talking about why charitable giving is up. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about charitable giving this hour. Do you make it a point to give to a charity or a nonprofit organization? What causes do you support? What organizations are near and dear to your heart? Tell us why you give and what causes you give to. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Talking about charitable giving today because a recent report from Giving USA found that charitable giving is at record high levels in 2015, the second consecutive year that we have given at record levels. Talked about why that might be and where that money is going to, and we're wondering what you think and what questions you might have. Our guest is Josh Burkholz, chair of the Advisory Council on Methodology and Giving USA. He's also a principal at Benz Whaley Fleschner, which provides fundraising advice and counsel to organizations around the world. So, Josh, we talked about in broad categories where people are giving. But when you say, for example, the largest category is religious organizations, is that we're putting money in the collection plate at the church, or are we giving to religious charities that do social work?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Joy, because one of the challenges is the IRS tracks all of giving in the Form 990s, which is required of all charitable organizations except for religious organizations, specifically houses of worship, mosques and temples and so forth, where the charitable organizations that are, their primary charter is doing international relief work or education, will typically, we would count those according to their standards under education or human services and so forth. So it's the number that is specifically to houses of worship or the denominations themselves. And because of the numbers being trickier to track, what we do is we use the IRS data for all the other categories, and we've kept track of third-party areas that have tracked religious giving independently and reconcile those against the areas unreported within the IRS to come up with those estimates. And those do continue to decline. It's still the largest portion, but we've seen declining alongside the declining membership, especially in the mainline and denominations within the Christian faith. Some of the giving in the non-Christian denominations are a little bit trickier to measure at this point, but we think that they're pretty consistent with about what the Christian level giving would be.
So what drives people to give? What's the motivation?
You know, it's a really interesting thing, and perhaps I've been a fundraising professional for a long time, and I've interacted with them, and, you know, people really value their gifts. For many of them, it's the best thing they've ever done, especially the larger gifts they give maybe later in life. And for fundraisers, it's not like being a timeshare salesperson where you need to get a few margaritas in them and hope that they lack judgment. Instead, it's really more like asking them to do something that they're extremely proud of. Hardly no one regrets making a gift. gift. After they've done it, they're very happy. We're always afraid to ask for it. And I think the reason they enjoy it is because they do see direct impact. And the charities that resonate with them are those that can demonstrate that right away. I like to think that charities, well, I don't know if I like to think that. The reality is charities are not the ones in need. It's the service, they service needs. And sometimes the charities that kind of portray a needy front are those that are not as rewarding to give to, but the charities that are very successful in meeting a need in our society, in the environment, in our community, into an area we care about. Giving to those charities and being part of that success and solving those problems is a very rewarding value that's somewhat unique and strong among American culture and in the West historically.
Philanthropy really is a big, serious-sounding word, and some might assume that being a philanthropist requires making big donations. Is that true, or is anyone who gives a philanthropist?
I think everyone who gives is a philanthropist. I really do. It's such a rewarding. I enjoy giving. I know the people I work with very much enjoy giving. And giving at all levels is very much appreciated. We see the big gifts. Those make the headlines because those are weird. They happen to be good weird, but they're mm-hmm. weird. So they're something that we pay attention to. But even the small gifts, I mean, they really do feed people. They really do give water to people. They do help save that one animal. And if we care about that, even a little bit of impact, we know how personally rewarding it is when we all get involved, the multiplying factor of how rewarding that is. It's really something to behold. We value voting, and we might think that one vote doesn't do much, but we know that the strength is in the numbers, and the same is very true in philanthropy, and sometimes even more so because we can see the impact of it so directly. So it's I think, very rewarding at all levels.
When we're talking charitable giving for this report, this is actual dollars. This does not include donations of our time?
That's correct. These would be actual dollars in terms of these numbers here. We don't track the time specifically. Sometimes there could be in-kind gifts from services, but it would be a really negligible amount. For the most part, this is purely dollars.
Yeah. And I understand you are a Midwesterner?
I am indeed. I hail from Minneapolis, and I even lived in western Wisconsin for a good stretch north of Hudson.
Oh, well, welcome back to Wisconsin via the radio then.
No, thank you. Thank you.
And as you know, then, we have sort of a reputation for being kind and generous people. How does the Midwest stack up against other regions of the U.S. when it comes to charitable giving?
You know, it's very strong, and it tracks really closely with the national statistics, and I think there's little differences. And I know the upper Midwest the best. Certainly, the arts has been strong in Minneapolis because of the Dayton family impact that they had very early on in the development of some of our industry here. Chicago, we've certainly seen strong community foundation and strong mature higher education. It was in Wisconsin, there's a long history of civic involvement. I think higher education, healthcare, the community support is strong. I've really enjoyed getting to know Mike Knetter at the University of Wisconsin Foundation. I think he's a very creative fundraising professional in the state. I think perhaps if there's anything negative, and negative is maybe a strong word for it, though, is I think that there's a great pride in Wisconsin of doing things effectively and efficiently and low cost, which might be hampering some of the growth. I know I've seen reports and I've studied a little bit that there seems to be a sentiment. So sometimes we're proud of being very efficient nonprofits, but perhaps too efficient in terms of our own growth. I hear that on occasion, and I see that sometimes. We're a less is more region. And I think in charities, if we look at companies, so we measure companies by a profit, and turning a small profit, the shareholders are excited about that. But with charities, if we don't see 10 times what the cost to raise the dollar is in terms of impact, we're doubtful. But that might hamper our growth, because in some ways, you know, a bake sale is low cost. It's the lowest cost there is, but there's not a huge return on that in terms of impact. Whereas investing in a charitable organization, I know perhaps we see the bad eggs, the abusers, but for the most part, organizations of larger size are able to multiply that impact largely. So if I had to be critical, maybe sometimes I think there's a less is more sentiment that keeps us from dreaming as big as we could. But the long history of civic involvement has been really quite solid, especially in the higher education environment and also civic involvement in Wisconsin.
That's really interesting. So what you're saying is that the nonprofits or the charitable organizations may not be pushing as much for more donations because they think that they should be operating on a shoestring?
I think that's a sentiment I hear quite often. I usually hear it spoken of as we're so proud of how much we can raise with so few people. I don't know why I hear that in the upper Midwest more than other places, but I certainly do in this area. You're exactly correct.
We are talking with Josh Burkholz. He is the chair of the Advisory Council on Methodology at Giving USA. We are talking about a new report from Giving USA that found that 2015 was another record-breaking year when it comes to charitable donations. And we are talking about why that is, why charitable giving is soaring these days. We'll talk some more about the future of charitable giving as well. But right now, I'm interested in hearing from you. What causes are important to you and why? Are you among those that help donate $373+ billion to charitable organizations in 2015? Call in with your questions or your favorite causes. Who do you give to and why? Or why not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Brian did call in and wanted to know how many charitable trusts are formed due to individual donors. I'm not sure I completely understand that, Josh, but maybe you do.
Yeah, I don't really know the counts for charitable trusts off the top of my head. Certainly there's alternate forms of giving, charitable remainder trusts, annuity trusts, and probably areas of specificity that might bore some of the people in your audience if we get into some of the details, but ways of establishing money that pays out to the charity where the remainder goes to the charity after or else amount that's held in trust where the payments go to the person so they can live on, but after they pass on, then the remainder of the principal goes to the charity. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. There has been some growth in trusts and so forth in terms of, we track specifically the charitable bequests, which are certainly up. They're up to $31.76 billion, which is leaving an estate gift, of course. And the trusts are a lesser portion, often track close to that. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, though.
Yeah, and just to clarify, that's one person. I think Brian wanted to know if one person giving a large amount of money and forming a charitable trust, that's where you say, whatever, I want to donate to charity with this large amount of money, or I want to put that in my will.
That's correct. Yes. So there's lots of different ways of structuring. The financial advisors will be very happy to help you with a lot of these different ways. There's setting up annuities where the designation could go to a charity. There's different types of trusts, which is there's an amount of money of which you get paid out money from that. And the principal might go to the charity or the payments might go to the charity. There's lots of different ways of structuring it for different tax advantages as part of an overall estate plan or a retirement plan. Alongside that, the donor advised fund growth has also been an area a lot of people will put some portion into the donor advised fund for the tax number, and then they grant from that as if they're their own mini foundation. So the trust might be designating to one charity or to several charities. It might be held by a charity as one of their assets, or it might be held within a community foundation to be paid out to various charities. So there's a lot of creativity and a lot of ways to give in ways that you might not expect, that might have more tax benefits at retirement or tax benefits to your family through your estate. And I think a lot of financial advisors know a lot of these areas. And really, if you look at the planned giving departments at most charities, they know these areas so well, and they'd be happy to work with you on ways to maximize your tax savings.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that planned giving department at, for example, at Wisconsin Public Radio and other nonprofits is where there is more growth happening. We never used to ask people to put us in their wills, and now we are.
Yeah, I think it's a really fantastic number, and a number that doesn't get much attention is that the bequests are up. And usually bequest giving, putting a charity in your will, flows out of regular giving over time. And certainly, having worked in the past for advising the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, one thing I've really enjoyed about public broadcasting listeners is their loyal, ongoing support. They're very regular, and they're committed to it. And many people, especially those that leave bequests, like to say that loyalty, I'd like to exist way beyond when I'm here on this earth. So they like to set up the bequest so that those gifts can keep going, because it's important not just for them, but they believe in it, and they believe in the success of it moving forward. So most definitely, the planned giving area is behind a lot of the growth, especially the energy that they go into to really try to help the donors have an enjoyable experience with giving. I like philanthropy. To me, is just being a fundraiser is such a noble profession, because I like to think of it as we're the school for philanthropists. We're helping people to make one of the best decisions they ever made in their life, and they're usually very happy about doing that. And among the happiest donors are those that have made charitable bequests.
Well, we love our loyal listeners and our very generous listeners, but we're not hearing from them for some reason right now. We have an open line for you. Besides Wisconsin Public Radio, besides Wisconsin Public Television, are there causes that are important to you that you donate to? Do you have any questions about charitable giving? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. What causes do you support and why? Why do you give? What motivates you to make a charitable contribution? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I know we had a lot of bad weather overnight, lots of big storms and power outages. We might have some listeners in the dark right now having breakfast by candlelight. But now we got some people calling in, so that's good. You talked a little bit about the tax, the tax implications or tax benefits of charitable contributions of various sorts. How important is that charitable tax deduction to the charitable donation?
Yeah, I think it informs timing more than anything. We certainly see that people's gifts go up considerably at year end, and we used to naively think it was only holiday driven, and I say naively because we see a lot more of it following after bonuses are paid or right before year ends to hit certain tax savings. I think it matters in some ways more to the average donor, those that are paying from their income and managing their cash flow. The very large gifts of appreciated assets seem to be less tax-driven, but more like investing and doing something really meaningful in their lives. So we see tax timing not to influence these really $100 million type gifts. More often we'll see market timing or liquidity events or other factors that are external to it. But for most of us, some portion of our charitable or of our tax deduction is the charitable deduction, and it does seem to be a motivating factor. But it's cheaper to not give than it is to give, even with the tax savings. So that shows that Americans really do care about those charities in question. And if they're going to give, certainly the tax is an incentive for when and to continue doing it.
Well, in our minute before another news break, those are the tax benefits. What about the emotional benefits of charitable giving?
Well, speaking as a donor myself, it's probably one of the most favorite areas of my life. We had one donor, it was at a major university, a Big Ten university, who had at her own and I'm sorry to say, at her funeral, she had viewed her gift to be right on par with her marriage and with her university diploma. In fact, the table that was set out, in commemoration, what she wanted out there was her diploma, a picture of her husband with her marriage certificate, and a report on the endowment that she had set up at the university. To her, it was at that same emotional level. And certainly, perhaps a large endowment gift, we can see that emotional level. But the smaller gifts, too, people really feel good about giving. It's a way to achieve some happiness more than earning.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then after news we'll talk more about how to make a gift and selecting the organization that's right for you, and take more of your calls at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 2015 was a record-setting year for charitable giving. Generous Americans gave an estimated $373 billion to a variety of causes. That's more than a 4% jump from the previous year. We are talking with our guest about what's behind the increase in charitable giving, where that money is going, and we'll talk more about how to make the best possible gift of your own, and welcome your favorite causes and your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Josh Burkholz. He is the chair of the Advisory Council on Methodology and Giving USA. He's also principal at Bentz Whaley Fleschner, which provides fundraising advice and counsel to organizations around the world. And now our lines are full, so let's take some calls. Larry in northern Wisconsin joins us first. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Pretty good. I understand you are a charitable businessman.
Yes. What I wanted to bring up was one of the problems that I'm running into, and I am a small business, but I mean, I do charities, the larger ones like cancer and whatnot, but I also, you know, help out the high schools and their sporting events and raising money for those things. One of the things I wanted to bring out was my funds have started to diminish, and the reasons they have for the charities is that there's so much online shopping. And I was wondering, does that affect, has he heard that that affects the amount of giving that small businesses are able to do anymore? If you're not really involved in the online shopping too much, we lose lots of business to that. And therefore, it also affects what we can give. And I'll take my answer off the air.
And maybe just some thoughts in general on giving from small businesses and whether that's up or down, and maybe other competitive market forces are resulting it being up or down.
Yeah, well, I think for overall the business giving is up, and the majority of the business giving are actually smaller organizations or small businesses. And certainly the competition, as the competitive landscape affects the economics of those businesses, the amount they can give charitably goes up or down. And the same is true for the charities themselves. They've had to become more competitive and embrace things like online giving, just like the online shopping. And you're seeing actually giving gifts at some nonprofits very much resembles buying products at one of the main online retailers. So certainly we're seeing a lot of shifts there. I think giving from the small businesses, one ways that they are affecting it is they are starting to, I mentioned the donor advised fund for some of the mid-level or upper middle class and so forth. I'm increasingly seeing smaller businesses also to do or organize and structured philanthropy working with their community foundations. We're really great. Community foundations are really great assets to our communities in helping us with some of those areas. So I can't speak to the business success and when business goes up or down, what that enables them to give charitably, but certainly a healthy economy helps provide a healthy charitable sector. And so there's a lot of question if in some of the volatility we're seeing recently, some of the external events and the shakiness in the markets, are we going to see maintaining these levels and where are we going to see more of that volatility first? Will it be in the smaller business or the larger? And sometimes the small businesses are unfortunately the front line of economic shifts.
Let's take another call from Lee in Wausau. Hello, Lee.
Yeah, hi, Joy. Hi, Josh.
Hello.
I just wanted to speak about maybe assisting and monitoring the elderly with their donations and to be careful with mail solicitations. My mother was receiving maybe 20 to 30 mail solicitations a day, both political and charitable. And I think it really started after maybe she got in with Publishing Clearinghouse and they started sharing her name.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would look at some of these charitable funds that would want something, and some of their revenues would be up to about $80 million in revenues, and some of their expenses would be maybe $60 to $70 million in expenses, and then $10 million might be in operating funds for, you know, running the charity. And then, you know, you'd look at the president's salary, and the president's salary is like $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so you wonder, is that really a great organization to be donating to? And the elderly, just they don't read deep or they don't look into the financials of the charitable fund. So I just think it's important to monitor. And then the other thing is 20 to 30 solicitations a day is just ridiculous.
Yeah, you can probably get her off those mailing lists, Lee.
But it's really hard. We would send letters to the organizations, and they say, yes, we'll get you off in 3 to 4 months. But we've got these letters ready to send out to you, and they're in the boxes ready to go. So you're going to be getting 3 or 4 more before you're cut off.
Yeah. Well, talk some about the how do we determine if a charitable cause is worth donating to, Josh?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question, and I think that the charities are really maturing and they're being much more respectful. And I think the organizations you receive from, it becomes like spam in your email. They just multiply. Maybe you give to a few of them, and some are buying lists and so forth. Really, the way the charities will spend money to build their base for support is so that they can find larger gifts later often. So they might spend money to build a base. If they're targeting the elderly, they're probably past the, if they acquire them as new donors, they're unlikely to be very large donors later since they haven't been around for a long time. So I'm less excited to give to those that are really spamming a lot on the direct mail, and that's personally. What I look for is that they have a direct measure of that impact, that they're talking about what they're doing very directly, that they'll let you talk with other donors, that they establish community for donors. I think that it's something the sector does need more advocacy for the elderly in charitable activities and so forth. Unfortunately, it's the bad eggs that are the ones that heavily spam their buying lists and sending out lists. Some of those with large salaries are very respectable organizations, and some may not be. For the most part, I've found that some of those with very large sectors are actually doing amazing work around the world. But I think that you're right to have a certain degree of skepticism, especially if you're getting peppered with lots of direct mail. I like to have a conversation with someone. If you're able to have a conversation with a human being, I know it's an odd litmus test, but that's a really helpful test. Talk to them before you give them a gift. Someone will answer the phone.
Yeah.
For me, that's very helpful. They're happy to talk to you. I would talk to them.
Well, sometimes they will call you, too, though.
Mm-hmm.
How are organizations, Josh, reaching out to potential donors these days, and are there challenges in reaching people?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's most of the charities that have a natural constituency, it's a little bit easier. Like education, they have their alumni and their parents and so forth. Healthcare will have people that had good patient experiences, and they'll reach out directly to those. Some that are building lists are having to purchase names because they don't have a natural constituency, and then they hope to retain them as a donor. And ideally, they'd be identifying names that are going to be donors for a long time. One of the projects within the Association of Fundraising Professionals was a fundraising effectiveness project they did several years ago, where they're looking at the gain-loss, how people would give, and then they would lapse and give, and then lapse. And I think a contributing factor to that was that a lot of these direct mail vendors were actually profiting off the charitable sector by offering names that would give once or that they would spam to, so you're paying these direct mail vendors and then leaving the retention up to the charity. And what's happened is the charities themselves are really maturing now, and they're figuring that out on their own, how to build their own lists, have events, and capture those names of people that are actually passionate, because they want to connect with people that care about the same cause they do as well. And direct mail and the phone calls are impersonal. So we're seeing rises in peer-to-peer where people ask their friends, which is a very personal way of giving. We're seeing giving days, state and national, like Giving Tuesday, which is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. We give opportunities for charities to leverage their online communities. Those, I think, are really positive trends where we're using our own people to talk to other people that we know share our passions and so forth, or at least have an affinity for that person, if nothing else. I find that organic way, a more grassroots way, to be a really healthy way to build that base of support.
Yeah. Are we going to see more door-to-door canvassing as we are now starting to see, even in public broadcasting? Wisconsin Public Television became, I think, the first to start doing this, knocking on the doors of lapsed members, and now Wisconsin Public Radio has also started this. Is this the trend of the future?
I think it might be a trend that we'll see a little bit. I've seen it come in waves. It was a little bit strong in the UK a couple years ago, and it kind of passed. And maybe it will be here to stay. My guess is that because of the cost, it'll be very narrow to past donors that were consistent, kind of to delight them and say, we just want to connect with you. I mean, we've seen it at churches for years, frankly. They have their elders go and visit people, and a lot of our philanthropic habits are patterned off of a historic church giving, even back to founding of Harvard in the 1600s and so forth. So the door-to-door is probably going to be there. I think what people really resonate with is a personal touch, and ways that we can have that personal touch be more meaningful without being creepy is what people are after. And so we're all struggling with what that is.
I'm with that. Earl in Medford is with us now. Hi, Earl.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great topic. I like research in space. And on our planet, and like just discovering Pluto again and Jupiter, I really like that. And then getting closer to Earth, across public radio and TV, and also the environment, and also Doctors Without Borders, which I think is a great organization.
Thank you so much for all of your favorite causes, Earl, and I'm glad Wisconsin Public Radio is among them. We have just a minute to go, Josh. Mm-hmm. I have so many questions, but let me just ask, what does the future hold? Do you see charitable giving continuing to grow?
It absolutely will. It's going to get. I'm really excited about things like the Giving Pledge, where billionaires are saying we're going to make a statement. Sometimes we think about the billionaires who don't give, but I'd rather focus on those that do. We're hitting record numbers. I would love to see us have a larger share of the GDP, but I think it's going to continue to stay strong because the charities are getting smarter. They're getting more personal. They're being helpful. The donors are finding it very rewarding to do so. And as long as the economy cooperates, I think that America will continue to be a very charitable people.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dre.
Josh Burkholz, Chair of the Advisory Council on Methodology at Giving USA. And thanks to Chris Molina and Elizabeth Deliquess and Marika Suval for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. It's our big question coming up next. We'll talk about whether or not the state should cut funding to Milwaukee Public Schools. And tomorrow at this time, we'll talk about empathy in our children. This is the Ideas Network.